Okay, let's get going. Glad everybody made it through the rain and the power outage and stuff like that. For the students, I passed out a bunch of little articles that I found in the news. And we had a great discussion last Thursday on stuff. And I want to thank everybody for their participation in the brainstorming session. I thought that was great, a lot of energy. And hope everybody carries that through to whatever project they may be working on in the future. But does anybody have any comments, questions, thoughts, anything they want to bring up? If you do, please let me know. That's what I'm here for. Handouts. There are some people that look like they're new people here. If you want to get a handout from the previous class session, let me know. I have some copies up here. Another situation where good communication skills would be beneficial when you're giving Stanford's commencement address. And again, this is a metaphor because you never know where you're going to end up. And if somebody told me when I was in school that I'd be in front of a class like this, I wouldn't believe them. So you never can tell. So it could be a Supreme Court justice as well.
Did you pick this as a counter-exam?
I didn't go to it, so I don't know if the talk itself was very good or...
No.
No, he wasn't. Okay. All right. Well, then that's motivation to have better communication skills. No. I didn't know. I'm sorry. I want to get back to this slide. And can anybody identify, where Stephen Hawking is in this photo? Not quite in space, but it's called the Vomit Comet. It does parabolic trajectories to simulate zero gravity. And when you think about it, zero gravity is a very disabling environment. Anybody who's in that environment is flailing around. They don't have control of their mobility. So, astronauts got to do something, and the way they get around it is they have the big Canada arm on the space shuttle, and they just use that as a platform to stand on and to provide, grounding so they can reach things. So the Canada arm is assistive technology for astronauts. And, space itself is extremely disabling. I mean, you got to carry around your own oxygen and food and stuff like that, so... he's having fun in zero gravity. That's great. So let's go on to another issue. And this is a true story. You have a runner that's not good enough to compete in the Olympics, but he has a double lower limb amputee, and he wears these carbon fiber feet, which have the ability to absorb energy while he's running and provide that energy at tow-off when he needs it. And so he wanted to race in the Olympics because these feet really work well for him. But actually he asked to be qualified, and he's been disqualified because these artificial legs give him an unfair advantage. So this is one of the few assistive technologies so far that actually improves on a human's ability, in this case, to run, which is sort of neat. Anybody have any thoughts about this? Yeah.
Actually, I was following this for a while, and I think the most recent thing that I read about was he was able to run in the time trials, but he didn't make
a qualified time. Oh, he did? I heard that he was disqualified, but I didn't realize.
There's a lot of talk about that.
Right. Okay, that's news to me, but thanks. And here's one that I sort of thought up, but I found this really nice picture. And so here's a child that has an accident that just severs the tip of the index finger. And at first thought, you might think, well, that's not a really debilitating, disabling situation. But because he played the piano and he couldn't continue to play the piano after that, that certainly, you know, caused him, you know, the cause he couldn't play the piano after that, which was, you know, for him very important. But if somebody can make an artificial tip that enables him to play the piano, then he's able-bodied again. So it depends on the situation and what kind of technology you get to see if a person can really enjoy, you know, what they've done before an accident like this. Any commentary on this? Okay. Well, on Thursday, we're going to have a doubleheader. And the beginning of the session, Doug Schwant is going to be talking on design challenges in assistive technology. He was a co-worker of mine at the VA. And where would this class be without all my VA colleagues? So, but he's a mechanical engineer, and he's been through this design process many, many times, worked on many different projects, which he'll talk about. And he has some thoughts on how to be successful in working on projects that he's going to share with you. And it's sort of important that to do your best to get here early, because he's going to have to leave after the first half hour. So please make your best effort to be here when class starts. And in the second part, Owen Edwards is going to be talking about motion sensing devices. And last year he actually talked about technology for recreation. But since that time, he's been employed at the Smith Kettlewell Eye Research Institute and is into a bunch of other things. So he's going to be reporting on those things on Thursday. So it's going to be a great lecture. But today we have Laura Martini, and she's a first-year student here at Stanford's Joint Program in Design. She has a background in mechanical engineering. She's from MIT. She's worked at Apple this past summer, this past year actually, and with other small product design firms, and spent a lot of last year backpacking around Europe. And maybe she can explain, you know, what she's wearing in this picture. It looks sort of odd. And she's interested in universal design aspects, and she's going to be talking about it from perspective not only of a student, but as somebody who has family members with disability and also a product design student. So please welcome Laura Martini.
Okay. Is that in the right spot for recording?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, I've already been introduced a little bit. I'm Laura Martini. I also go by Martini, but I will answer to Laura as well. I'm originally from Minnesota, a little bit about me. I went to school in Boston at MIT. And then I'm obviously right now in California. I also came out here to work at Apple. I worked in the iMac product design group for a few times, and essentially to make money so I could go travel around Europe, which explains what I was wearing in that photo, which was a life vest. I was on a little lifeboat up in Norway. So what is universal design? There's the official definition, which I will let you all read for a minute. Okay, so universal design. Punchline is, you make a product and you make it so as many people as possible can use it. What does that mean exactly? It means, to me, I guess it means, would you buy the product if you didn't absolutely have to use it? Like, if you didn't need the fact that, say, it worked with your arthritic hands, or that it worked because you only had one hand, would you still buy the product? And to me, that separates universal design from adaptive design and adaptive technologies, because in those cases, you're using the technology because you absolutely have to. So we're going to start out with a little activity. And I have three volunteers. The challenge is going to be you get one hand and a can opener and a can. Okay, I see a couple volunteers back. Okay. And I kind of hope you guys don't succeed, because I don't know what I'll do with open cans. You can come up, sure. Yeah, why don't you come up? It doesn't really matter. If you're comfortable sitting down. Anyone else want to try? Okay, we'll get one. Oops, sorry. You can have the special Leatherman edition can opener. Oh, yeah, it may actually. You get one hand, no two hands. You get like one hand.
Like all the way?
Enough. I mean, could you get soup out of there for lunch? Like. Any success? All right, so yes. You get one hand. That's all. That's the only restriction. One hand.
Okay, so you could.
You could, but can I hear from anyone who's trying this right now what your experience is like? Do you feel like this item is well designed for the predicament you're in right now?
No.
Okay, you can stop if you want. Or you can keep going at it till you succeeded, either way. But what do you think some solutions might be for the can opener? I like it. Add electricity is kind of a good solution. Yeah? Oh, yeah.
Make it a bungee.
Make it
a bungee.
Well, the thing, like, if you don't have a handspring, like, I'm squeezing really hard every time. But what I was, like, what I tried first was, like, oh, maybe it'll hold together, you know, like, if I squeeze it in and then I can kind of leave it on there and then turn the thing. Like, if there's a locking.
Mm-hmm.
It's
another great idea. So the problem is doing two things at once. Any other suggestions? There's not, you know, there are plenty of right answers. So we'll get to this a little bit later. Oh, yeah? Okay, so something to hold it in place, because one of the problems is that you have to hold it. And that's probably caused by the punching. All right, well, you can all keep the soup. It's your prize, or give it back. I'll take the can openers back. That's good soup, too. That stuff's really good. So I'll get to this a little more later, but at my house, my mom only has one hand, so we just have an electric can opener. For some other tasks, like opening jars, we have my father. So... He is assistive technology in my house. We actually have, like, an official can opener. My mom gave up with it, and she just asks other people to open it. So going back to kind of assistive design versus universal design, as you can see on the left, like, what makes that left... Oh, sorry, this is a spoon that's meant for, like, scooping, I think. I wasn't entirely sure, but it definitely looked like assistive design to me, and... Can anyone articulate why that might be?
It's more like almost like a shovel. Mm-hmm. So you can get, if you're going this way instead of that way, it's better to get it into your mouth.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, so it, yeah. Yeah, really easy to handle, so it's great. It's easy to hold on to. It's really ergonomic. If you saw this on the shelf next to kind of your everyday IKEA spoon, would you buy this? Wouldn't know it was a spoon. That's a good point. So how about this? This is a peeler on the right. Some of the features are it has a nice cushy grip. It has, if you can see right here, it swivels, and so it doesn't quite matter as much when you're peeling like a potato or a carrot or something exactly if your angle's perfect. It'll compensate. If you saw this on the shelf next to kind of a basic, you know, go to Target and just a basic peeler of this, would anybody buy it?
Yeah.
I think I actually have the peeler.
It's a very appealing design.
Somebody had it. So, to me, oh yeah? Not in the store, but I just Googled for, I forget, assistive spoons or something, and found a lot of prototype-looking spoons. Like they didn't stick their top-tier industrial designers on this team. It just, like, you know, it functions, and for the people it serves, it's really, really important. But it's only designed to serve those particular people. Whereas, and it's just, it's a very different, a different end goal. Yeah. That is very true. I didn't even think of that. Only for right-handed use. Yes, and that's important. We'll get to it later. My mom only has her left hand. She could never use that spoon. So it's for a very particular subset of people. Whereas the OXO one works for anyone who can hold a potato peeler, I guess. So a little more about OXO. Someone mentioned that they actually have that product, or they've seen it. A lot of people have OXO. If you don't recognize any of these products, you may recognize that salad spinner where you kind of push down in the middle. And the great thing about OXO is that it's great design for everyone. If you enjoy using them, you can. I will let you read the list of all of the things that they make real quick. Can you read it from the back? Okay. Is there anything on this list that is surprising people? So you're saying these features, everyone would find them attractive, not just someone who had a certain limitation. That's really interesting. Are there any products in particular that you would that you pick out of being like, that's really, I would like that.
The tea kettle.
Yeah? So the kettle that, with whistle lids that open automatically when tipped to pour. Yeah, so you don't have to like do the whole two-handed, hold the cap on. Yeah, I mean, these are all really reasonable. So OXO is the prime shining example of really good universal design because, I mean, the whole point of universal design is that you kind of look to people with very extreme situations, say people with arthritis or only one hand or very limited hand strength, and you use them to inspire design that then everyone can use. So, for instance, how often are you talking on the phone or holding something or you don't have both hands available, but you need to do something? Well, it's really useful. Maybe you usually have use of both hands, but you don't always. So to me, that's why universal design is so important. Another really good example are curb cuts. So I don't know if everyone knows the history of them, so real quick. They haven't always been around. It was, I think, an ADA act that required them, and they're originally just because, okay, you need to get people who are in wheelchairs, they need to be able to get everywhere. Well, anyone who's ever biked anywhere, pushed a baby stroller, rolled a suitcase, anything, knows that these are really, really important to have. And really, like, okay, so great, they were originally forced into place because of the ADA, but we can all benefit from them. I was actually reading there's some airport where they had just a little curb cut. It was whatever they officially had to have. And they had to make it span the entire crosswalk later because there was this queuing up of people with suitcases and it was stopping all the traffic because everyone wanted to go through that one spot. So that's another good example. Houses. How do you think houses need... How do you think universal design can be integrated into houses to make them more livable? Especially as people age, but... Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that when we built our house, we built it accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that 90% of the time, I probably use more features than my daughter does because the ramps allow me to bring things in and out. The way that I can move materials up and down at different levels, transitioning from one room to another. Since I mean, they're just the door handles.
Yeah, can you go into more details about what features your house has?
Sure. For instance, one of the things that I think is probably the most simple feature of the building, we specifically asked the builder about this, and the builders as it now, is we wanted a level surface for building a house, because we don't want to be on a hill, in a hilly area. And they said, no problem. Of course, we were on the biggest hill in the area. So one of the problems was steps, so they wanted to put a lot of steps. So rather than putting steps, we just had them landscape the land on the proper coming down the hill. So there's an easily accessible ramp if you're pushing someone in a wheelchair or they're coming in a power wheelchair. So all the landscaping around the house allows you to not have to use steps to get into the house. And it fits into the, you know, the land and everything else. That, I think, is one of the big things. In the garage, rather than having steps, we have a ramp that comes down the side wall. So whenever I'm doing anything, I'm looking at packages, becoming a shopping cart, or a crate, or refrigerator in the house, that ramp serves as the access for bringing those kind of heavier objects when you're in the house. And I also mentioned the door handles. Rather than having normal knobs, you have the lever handles, which make it easier to open up for anyone. So,
Those are wonderful examples. Now, when people walk into your house, do they immediately say, oh, this house is designed for someone who's in a wheelchair?
No, not at all. In fact, most people comment, for instance, the walkway, rather than being sort of narrow like mostly everyone else's, it's wider so that if she's coming in a wheelchair, she doesn't go off the edge. And, you know, we use paper. Wow, this is really a nice walk. This is really neat. But, you know, like, rather than, oh, why'd you build this ramp for, oh, you obviously have somebody in a wheelchair, so you built this ramp. So it's those kind of things that, like you said, the universal design makes it work. Same thing with the showers, making showers comfortable and accessible.
I didn't pay him to sit there and say that, I swear. So, yeah, just to summarize, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. There are all these features that you can put in that everyone gets to use, and people don't, it doesn't have to be something where you walk in and go, oh my gosh, this is clearly designed for someone to be able to age as they live here. And especially if you can integrate features in when you're building. You said you built the house and were able to landscape it.
I wonder why. We said, why isn't every house built like this? Because it just made so much sense. You know, like, it's easier for me. So it's interesting.
And it is a good point. Yeah.
Well, in Europe, it's almost universal. You have showers that are the length of the hose, so you can take it off and bring it down. Some of them.
Yeah, and they're simple things that you don't realize you need until you have kind of this extreme user group to really kind of spawn this design, and then you're like, hey, wait, why didn't we think of that before? So, yeah.
What about a higher cost, I guess, to build that house and have it level versus moving steps? Must have at least cost more.
No, it was actually, we kind of incorporated into the overall build, but we think it was actually cheaper because it used less material.
for instance, pour all the concrete that you need for the steps, and to have someone actually mold those and fit it in is different than having, as you're landscaping the land, just making sure that you have the right grade, and then just simply laying whatever you need right on top of it. You actually use less material. And I would say that was, more than likely, because if you're building a lot of houses and you have a certain template, then yes, you may be right, because you're reordering the materials and that. But I think when you look at the overall cost, I think the cost would be better.
That's fantastic, yeah. So moving to the next phase of the presentation, this is my family, my mom, my dad, my sister, me. Should probably be evident who's who in the picture. First, my sister. She's the one in the family where if you looked at all four of us, she'd probably be the first one that you'd say, she's the one who has the disability. And yes, she does have something with a name. It's called Rubenstein-Tavy syndrome. Means that she has to wear leg braces to walk, or when she's in our house, oftentimes she will wear knee pads. She has mental retardation, so she lives, when she was 19, she's 27 now? Yes, 27. But when she was 19, she moved into a group home with three other young women. It's full staffed all the time, and she goes to a day program and works. Although, wonderful thing about Sarah is that she's a lot smarter than most people give her credit for. So I don't know if you're familiar with the idea of an IQ, the IQ, and then versus the EQ, the emotional quotient. Pretty sure she has the highest EQ in our family because she can wrap people around her little finger so easily. So, my parents are trying to get her more involved at working at her day program, but the staff there informed her that Sarah doesn't care to work. which is reminiscent of the time when she was first trying out the group home program, and we picked her up, and the staff was so apologetic that they weren't able to serve her breakfast in bed every day because it didn't always work. She does not get breakfast in bed every day at home, I can assure you of that. So, the great thing about growing up with Sarah is I saw that there's so much more to people than just how well you do on tests. The types of designs that she needs fall more into the assistive design category. And so she wears leg braces. You can't see them in this picture. They're big steel plastic contraptions. And they're great because without them, she wouldn't be ambulatory. She'd have to be in a wheelchair. So for her, it does, assistive designs are great. Fortunately, she doesn't require a whole lot else. But she was lucky that the house my parents happened to live in when she was born was pretty much one level. It's not so good. You can see over. There we go. It's not very well designed. These steps, you can see there's a handrail there, and that's because there is one little step to get into the house. And so we had to put that in so she could kind of hold it on and get up. If we'd been designing our own house, we definitely wouldn't have done that.
Looks like you'd have a slope
right there. Yes, could have done it. It would have been easy, but it's just the sort of thing people don't think about when they build. You might notice over here in the driveway, we have the cleanest driveway on the block, because if my sister, she's not very stable when she walks, and if there was any ice or anything on it, she could slip. And so it's kind of for her, but then it's really good for the rest of us who don't slip. So it's a little subtle way of universally designing our driveway. I'm just trying to kind of, my whole point today is to just kind of get you all looking around you and kind of seeing where systems can be designed better for everyone, and then that helps people who have disabilities as well. Then there's my dad. There are a couple of disabilities he has. I won't make you guess them. One of them is just age. He just turned 70, and, your abilities just start to decline with age naturally. Universal design is wonderful, especially like houses. A lot of universal design of houses is designed for you to be able to age in place, it's calling, where your house can be kind of adapted as your faculties diminish. Another disability he has is he can't read instruction manuals. I don't know why. Some of us in this room may share that disability. And, we all laugh, but then, wait, yeah. you should design for people who can't read instruction manuals. Why, you know, it's the whole idea of human-centered design, that you as a designer are designing for to meet people where they are. And if he's not going to read the instruction manual, you should make it really clear. You know, like, here, there's an arrow, and it goes one way. Another arrow goes the other way. I don't know what the other three buttons are for, but as long as those arrows work. So that's my dad. I always try to keep him in mind when I'm designing. Like, would my dad be able to figure this out? And then there's my mom. And we talked a little bit about her before. This is her gardening. She was born just with her right, or missing her right hand. It's called, we think, it's amniotic banding, which is just when you're in the womb, your arm kind of punctures through, and it just stopped developing at some point. So she's always had it. We don't know exactly why, but we think that's why. Just kind of to get us all out of audience mode for a minute, there's another challenge. This is another one-handed challenge. Can you remove your shoe and get it back on using... This time I will give you also the ability of your elbow, because that's what my mom has. Flip-flops, okay, you got it done. You practiced, though, on the can opener. You were really good. Some people are... the slip-ons are having a good time. I'm not seeing anyone trying this who has shoelaces. You'd have to use your teeth? If that you choose, I could. Elastic? Yeah. So, I mean, that is one option. I can tell you my mom does have plenty of shoes with shoelaces in her closet. What?
Velcro.
Yeah, Velcro. No, those are all great solutions. Shoes are not something, normal shoes with shoelaces aren't really designed for one hand. But, you know, my mom's kind of figured out, it's always this, like, trick that she uses to impress five-year-olds when they're, like, fixated on, she's missing a hand. She's like, but I can tie my shoe, and they always get really, really excited. Something about, like, I guess five-year-olds understand shoe tying. But, you know, she can do it. She's figured it out. Shoes aren't really well designed for her. But if you ever meet her, she's happy to show you the shoe trick. She just needs long enough laces is kind of part of the trick. How about drawers? Who can tell me the difference between these two drawers, other than really obvious things? Yeah?
Positioning the handles.
Yeah, what is it about the handles on the left?
One of them is gray and you can hold on to them and push them open, and the other looks like you can't really push them.
Mm-hmm. So it's the handle, it's easier to grab on.
It's the position of the solution, just because they're middle of the balance.
Mm-hmm.
So use one hand versus two.
Yeah.
Then again, with the handles, you're more likely to, if you bump up against it, you're more likely to hurt yourself.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but it's sort of a, they're so handy. I mean, you can put straps on, you can hook things on. There's just so many things you can do with that kind of handle. And ideally, they don't have, these appear to have an extension.
Mm-hmm.
Like little, that go past where they anchor,
mm-hmm.
which is not ideal. It's more ideal to have the anchor point be the end point.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you can catch on what hangs over.
Yeah.
Also, the lower drawer handles are higher. You have a bigger drawer to get out of the
So, yeah, those are all really insightful. These are both drawers we happen to have at my house, and you can definitely tell my mom has a much easier time opening the drawers with just one handle in the center, as opposed to she can get the other ones open, but sometimes you have to go back and forth. Would you be happy to have either set of these drawers in your house? I mean, do you look at one of them and say, that one looks kind of like it's designed for someone who only has one hand? Do you ever? No. So just another little subtle way. We also have a laptop. Now my mom has a MacBook Air. Can anyone think of reasons why this particular computer, what's good about it, what's bad about it, if you only had one hand. Ding. It's light. Do you want to explain why that might be good? It's very inconvenient. You can imagine, like, essentially she has kind of like her elbow or a little part of her arm that's not a finger. So, what might not be so good about this computer? What would you redesign, or where would you target for redesigning it? Now, if you had a keyboard that looked really good and you could type with one hand, who do you think would want to? Who would be interested in purchasing that computer?
People do that already on their cell phone, like with the QWERTY keyboard. It just
obviously the keys are closer together.
Well, it's closer because the keys are closer together, but it's also because I don't think many people would use like a one-handed type. Obviously it would feel weird to me because I'm used to typing with two hands. But if you just had one hand, like I wouldn't know what to do with the other one.
Yeah.
Or a recorder keyboard for pictures can be used with my hand because it was only about 5 keys. And then there's a braille writing keyboard, which is only a handful of keys.
John, that's wrong because both of those keyboards are QWERTY keyboards where you need two hands to press multiple keys at the same time.
Braille is 6 keys.
With my computer, I have a PC, and I'm not allowed to type with both hands, and I only type with one finger.
Oh, you mean you don't?
You don't.
And what do you think of that experience?
I think it's easier and hard for me in a lot of different ways, because sometimes I can hold the shift key with my right hand, but I feel it hard for me to type with both hands like most people do.
What about your speed?
And my speed, so sometimes I can type slow or fast.
And what, when you said you hold down the shift, do you use two hands then when you hold down the shift button?
One hand to hold the shift button, and I use my finger to push the question mark or exclamation mark.
Okay.
Do you use sticky keys? No, I don't use sticky keys.
No.
Someone want to explain? Do you want to explain what sticky keys is?
So sticky keys is you can hit the shift key and then hit the key that you want.
So it's a two-stroke operation rather than one stroke simultaneously.
Okay, and does
it's,
it?
I think it's on anybody's computer.
Yeah.
It's standard.
Interesting. Yeah.
What about voice recognition?
That's also another way to solve the problem.
Well, something on the order of the shift lock.
Mm-hmm.
You hit that, and then you catalyze the letter and hit it again. Or if you want a series of catalyzed letters, you need that right for the other. But there could also be other keys that toggle that right, too.
Sure. So there are definitely some solutions people have come up with. Yeah?
I was going to add, because one of the things I think is safe said in accessibility, one thing Dara didn't add is one of the reasons she doesn't use sticky keys, because she says from surgery in her right hand to give her more flexibility. Want her to use it. So in order to force her to kind of use it, you take away that. So one of the things about enablement, I think, is sometimes if we over-enable, then we take away the ability for someone to stretch. Or so it's just one of those decisions.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point of at what point do you just allow the user to kind of meet the technology? Yeah, I mean, some of the solutions are great. I don't know if my mom would want to, like, have a separate stick and kind of draw attention to her disability. I think she tries to, to just buy products that work as best as possible for her. And then, she doesn't really like using assistive technologies that really stick out. Yes?
There's a whole range of specialized keyboards, small keyboards, big keyboards. There's some keyboards that are actually one-handed, specialized keyboards, and stuff that you can buy and plug in as a USB device. So you can use a standard computer, but you have your own specialized keyboard. And that's been a solution for a lot of folks.
Yeah. So what do we think? Does that fall into the realm of assistive technology or universal design, the specialized keyboards? I'm hearing murmurs. Does anyone want to stand up for their opinion and tell me why they think so? Yeah.
I would say, like, the specialized keyboards would be assistive technology because if it was a universal design, then a lot of people would start buying it because they would be better than their current keyboard. But, I've never heard of I've seen the big keyboards, but I don't know about one-handed keyboards, so I'm assuming that they're assistive technology because they haven't been universally used, I guess.
So, yeah.
Well, it's just on the keyboard itself. It's like this, the keyboards that come with all of our computers really are not ergonomically correct for our use at all.
Definitely not, yeah.
There's definitely other keyboard styles that would be better for our hands and our arms and things. So it seems that I would say if there's a couple of keyboards, I would call them universally designed.
So they're good for everyone, not just people with one hand.
So I think someone alluded to earlier, to make universal design, you can eliminate the keyboard altogether. Because, not everybody, when you talk about, not everybody types as fast. So, if someone's sitting there doing a paper and who's a typist, you can really type it out, but there's going to be much better than that, say, hey, you can go like, hunt that pretty fast. It's
maybe something that read your brain waves would. That would be universal design. And there aren't one right answers. I don't necessarily know if, kind of where you draw the line all the time, but interesting questions to think about.
What about speech recognition software that exists?
Yeah, it's another option.
Developed to the point now where you can do essentially a lot of the typing, so to speak.
Although I don't know if any of you use Google Voice for getting your answer messages. Yes, I'm seeing. So yeah, the technology works. It's not always perfect.
The best one I think is
JOTT.
Records your voice, so if you want to send an email, it will record your voice and it'll write it down or type it.
Oh, that's nice.
Works, but it's like you spend more time correcting what you've said rather than just typing it out. At least that's
what you do. Yeah. I noticed that the iPhone and iPod touch keyboards can be used completely with one finger there. And then there's voice kits, so it can be interactive for the client as well.
Yeah, so they're definitely. It's clear that there's a problem with keyboards because there's so many solutions to it. The fact that no single solution works for everyone means that it's a very hard problem. So if you want to go try to solve it, you have a lot of company. Yeah. The next little kind of mini design problem. So my mom likes to garden. What do you notice about this wheelbarrow?
It's really
What about it requires two hands? Two separate handles. Yeah? So, if you were to redesign it, would it look anything like this? And so, what's nice about this wheelbarrow? No, but I thought about buying my mom something like that. It's like, look, you only need one hand. This is just a normal wheelbarrow. They sell it online at gardentenders.com, or they either had that or they had an article there. But what's nice about this wheelbarrow? Yeah.
But then you have to have wheel brakes, I think it's still there. Because when you drop a wheelbarrow, that usually is something closer than.
So there are new problems that arise when you add some features. That's a good point.
Now, I don't know who has strong enough for, you know, if somebody's in a wheelchair and there's a paraplegic.
Right, so universal design doesn't necessarily mean it works for every single person, because you're right, not everyone could use this wheelbarrow, but this wheelbarrow is designed so that it serves as many people as possible, and that's, I think, a good point. It's where that's the difference between accessible design and universal design. Is accessible design would probably be an electrically operated wheelbarrow that someone in a wheelchair could use, but no one else would probably buy it because it would probably cost $5,000 and be kind of clunky.
And the battery is
good. Right.
I'd say the wheelbarrow that I have is much like this. It's called a garden cart.
Mm.
The difference is it doesn't have back wheels. It has just a standard place where you set it down so you don't need the locker. It holds itself. But it limits the kind of work that I can. So anything that I would need a single wheel on, I wouldn't be able to use it anyway because my wheelchair is too wide. So if you're trying to go up a plank, let's say, that's totally out of a wheelchair user's range of ability. But this kind of thing works really well. And it balances even with a load where I can just with one finger lift and move it.
And do you think you would like your wheelbarrow just as much if you weren't in a wheelchair? Yes, it's kind of a hard question to answer.
It's
like,
a hard question because if I weren't in a wheelchair, there would be other things that I would be doing that would require a single load tire.
Interesting.
Just for maneuverability up things, which this has about a 25, 28 inch maybe.
That's interesting. Yeah, so adding in these features does remove other abilities. If you wanted to go up a plank, then you are kind of stuck with the one wheel design. So maybe a solution is kind of one handle, one wheel. It's not the best, kind of wobbly, like the worst of both worlds. I don't know. So sports. What kind of sports do you think my mom can do with one hand? Ball?
Probably not archery.
Tennis, as long as it's. Yeah. Oh, she's actually really good at ping pong. Well.
Tennis.
So, she does ski, and she would be happy to have you all know that she got the ski pole for free because the store just had one and didn't know what else they were going to do with it. You'd be surprised the good stuff you can get just having one hand, like good, really nice gloves and ski poles and things like that. She also goes swimming, and she doesn't know how she swims in a straight line, but she does, and she doesn't think about it. So she doesn't go rock climbing, and we were just on a trip, and she decided not to go zip lining. Anyone? Zip lining, where you have a cable, and you're, like, really, really high above the trees and going. So, yeah, and it requires kind of braking. So why do you think she doesn't go rock climbing or zip lining? So it's a safety thing? Yep. Why do you think she doesn't want to? She's smart. Yeah. Yeah, because she's 57 and she doesn't want to go ziplining. So, yeah, she knows her limits. I think she finds having only one hand is a really good excuse for some things. Like, oh, you know, it might be hard with one hand. Maybe I'll just stay on the ground today. So, you know, sometimes what people don't do has nothing to do with whether or not they can. It's just whether or not they really want to. So what do you think? There's one part of her history she's very, very proud of. There was one job she had. I'm giving you a huge hint. One job she had where she was the best at it that they'd ever had. Any ideas of if you only have one hand, what does that make you really good at?
Detail.
Yes. How do details and lobsters go together? This is kind of like completely, you don't have to really know the answer to this. I'm just curious. Yeah. Close. Yeah, just it's one less thing to think about. Yeah, these are all right. So my mom worked in a marine biology lab and worked on lobsters and had to put little electrodes on them. And the professor said that by far she was the best person they'd ever had at the job because, you know, only having one hand, all the brain cells that normally get mapped to two just get mapped to one. And so she's really, really good. She's really good at sewing and a lot of this detail work. And all of us two-handed people just can't compare. So... sorry, guys. And if you're curious to know more, Center of Universal Designs online. And then if you're curious to know more about the architecture stuff, Cynthia Laybrock, I think that's how you pronounce her name, wrote a couple good books on it, and her website's okay. But they wrote a nice New York Times article about her. I'll leave it up for a minute in case you want to get that down. Does anyone have any questions or comments or stories?
We had a speaker in class several years ago on universal design, and there's a webpage that I have that lists the seven rules of universal design. I think, and I'll just look back. Search for Molly Story, STOLY. You'll find that. There was actually a group of people that got together and came up with these concepts. And her slides are available too online on the course website. If anybody can't find them, just email me and I'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
One of the, not trying to. Myself. But, you know, I was probably around the beginning of the internet and the beginning of a lot of technology, and, you know, that in its infancy was the purview of built by geeks and engineers to be used by geeks and engineers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because everything was pretty much at the level of coding and programming, hard coding IP addresses and things of that nature. And it was when people started getting together and talking about what you would now call universal design
mm-hmm.
or enabled. Make it available to stupid people. But really, I mean, the people who weren't really, that wasn't their core function.
Right.
And engineers, but they would use it to send emails, you know, and social networks and things like that. So to me, I think that's an example of
It's a really good point that, yeah, by making it easier to use, it allows something to be popular. And I'm sure, except for a couple people in back who went to MIT, most of us don't usually feel like we have a disability because we can't, like, hard code IP addresses and things. But it is kind of a disability if the tool's only made for people who can do that. So it's a redefinition of what disability is in that context. All right. Are we happy? Okay. The can openers back too as well. And I can take the food back if you don't want to deal with it.
Thank you.